And welcome back to the second hour of We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power.
Team Power is our local... Turn your back to me to do it so I can't distract you.
Stop looking at me. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer in Shasta Lake, just north of Redding. They're on Twin View Boulevard, 3119, and just south of Phil's Propeller. You can reach them at 226-9226 or on the web at readingtractors.com. Give them a call. You need tractors, service, parts. They do it all down there. Give them a call.
Yeah, and a little unsolicited commercial here for Charles at AIRECO, A-I-R-E-C-O, Heating and Cooling. His phone number is 530-510-7362. So if your air conditioner is busted and you're in the city of Reading, tell you what, Charles actually cares that your air conditioner is broken. And okay, that's not secondary to the fact that he can fix it. Actually, primarily he can fix it, but he also actually cares, which is nice. And shows up on time and all those good things, which is marvelous. He's been in business like 30 years, I think is what he told me. But so it's Charles at AIRECO, and I'll give his number again. It's 530-510-7362. And we like him so much because he saved us from our house being 92 degrees inside, which was magical. The cans in the cupboard were hot. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was hot. It was unlivable.
It was before the fire.
Yeah, Bill was out. I'm out.
Yeah, Aaron was out. Aaron was out, too.
Yeah.
We're done. So anyway, if you're having that situation and you're not getting results or you don't know who to call, I'd call Charles, frankly. He would be my first choice. And let's see. So back to our regularly scheduled program. We're here chatting with Jim Smith. He's the Ag Commissioner in Siskiyou County, and we did a program with him last week. So if you want to find out what a sealer does, because your ag commissioner in your county is also the sealer, they do all the weights and measures. And we had an extensive conversation on how that works. I think you'd be really interested in that, actually. And now you'll know what those little tags are on the gas pump and on the scales at the store and all the rest of it. And
They're out there watching out for you.
That was July 29th we did, and I've got a link to that on the site. And so today's August 5th, just in case we replay this and you're wondering what's going on. We're still having the fire in Reading. Little commercial note there.
Yeah, still, I don't think we've seen blue sky now for a couple of months.
I had to go to 6,000 feet yesterday to see blue sky. I had to go pick up a lamb from the butcher shop when I ordered it. I neglected to note it was 2 hours away.
By the time she got home with it was smoked lamb. It was had its own its own flavor.
I had to bring the little buzzard back into Smokeville. It's brutal when you tell a rancher, yeah, sure, I'd like one of your lambs. That'd be great. He goes, okay, well, we're going to butcher, you know, blah, blah, blah. We get done with all that. And he said, I said, well, you know, who do you use for a butcher? Where do you want me to pick it up? Oh, we use Idaho Grocery. And I'm like, Idaho Grocery? I don't know those guys. Oh, they're in Susanville.
It's two hours
away. But you know what? I have to say, if you want a really great butcher shop, Idaho Grocery in Susanville is amazing. And they have every kind of spice or marinade or I've never seen that many sauces, spices, anything that you could use on like, you know, beef, chicken, if you have to eat chicken for some reason.
What about rabbit?
Again, I don't know why you'd want to do that. Pork, they got everything, but they're a great butcher shop. So there's more unsolicited. God, we love private industry. You go private industry. Okay. So Jim, Talk to us about we talk a lot about the Klamath Basin. We have done some programs about that, but we can't get too far into this without discussing the economic impact on that area if, in fact, they shut the water off. And I mean, this will happen again. It isn't just this year. They've been doing this for years. The water's on, the water's off, the water's on, the water's off. How many people are affected by this? How much agriculture and how much money? Because when the environmentalists, the tribes, the government, when all this stuff rolls in and shuts the water off, the one thing that's never considered and never part of the equation is the people who live there, the people who make a living there, and the people who need the products that come from that area.
Now, are you talking about the dam removal situation or just the irrigation?
No, I'm just talking about the irrigation.
Okay, they want to shut the irrigation water off.
Well, yeah, they have. a couple of times, you know, and they had the big bucket brigade up there in 2001, and now we're back at it again. And the court decision we were going to talk about last week actually got punted. What do you think, Jimmy? Think that that decision to shut the water off and mitigate for the stupid fish up there, you think that'll go past the growing season? Because that's kind of what it looks like.
I'm pretty sure it will. I think that by the time Oregon court, which is now a new requirement to entertain that motion for an injunction on turning the water off by the tribe, Klamath Tribe, will probably take a while to get into place.
And the really fun part for people who don't, for the people who don't follow the drama up there, that actually the kind of funny part is the judge in San Francisco who was hearing the case brought by the Klamath Tribe against the Bureau of Reclamation to shut the water off to the irrigators so they could have more water for the suckerfish who actually thrive in low water. But that's a whole different story. When that went to San Francisco, there was an amicus brief that went in from Siskiyou County, Modoc County, and the Modoc Tribe. And the Modoc Tribe weighed in and said, actually, they don't need all that water. We're not in favor of it. And so the judge looked at one tribe wants the water off, one tribe wants the water on. Hey, you know what? This would be a better case to hear in Oregon.
Yep. I think he probably got a little bit concerned about having to make a decision on that. He also told the tribe that they didn't have enough evidence for an injunction considering the level of hurt that would be applied to the local communities, and kind of gave the tribes something to reconsider if they're going to actually pursue it in an Oregon court. I guess we will see how that bores out. I'm not sure I could actually address that, but I'm concerned that they will go ahead and try to introduce an injunction. The unfortunate thing is that a little bit of review might be of interest. You know, in 2001, the government shut the water off based upon the suckerfish endangered species. And after the fact, you know, after that year when there wasn't any water, you know, personal property was impacted by taking away water rights. Those are actually property that people own, and that includes the farmers in the project. That was taken away without any recourse, and they actually have admitted that there was no reason to have shut the water off completely during that period of time. However, there was very little, if any, compensation offered to anybody that had a water right that was restricted on that issue. They actually threw that out of court. So in 2001, the water was turned off. The Army came in, of course. I'm being a little facetious here, but they were guarding the head gates so that the rowdy Klamath Basin farmers wouldn't storm the gates and turn the water on so they could irrigate their
crops. Horrible farmers.
You know, but they were out there with their machine guns, and, you know, we had our local law enforcement was present, which really helped mitigate some of the hot feelings that were going out there. Most of our sheriffs and local law enforcement, we have a healthy respect for them. The folks up in the North State are very supportive of our local law enforcement agent. I think that had a mitigating effect when you consider the wealth of federal agents that were parked around that head gate in 2001. So, you know, give them a little compliment. I think the sheriffs did a good job at toning that down. It probably saved a lot of people from further issues. So, let's go on a little bit more. The lawsuits continue to flow. Environmental groups have often told me that their intent, in addition to get a wild and scenic river that has no barriers from the headwaters of the Klamath River to the ocean, they also want to establish the Everglades of the West, which means they want to turn back the clock and run all the water back into the Klamath project as a marsh, a large marsh. And that means getting rid of everybody out there. So to that aim, environmental groups have banded together. The tribe has used that Endangered Species Act to garner more power and influence and maybe money, in addition to protecting their subsistence food, which is a Lost River sucker found in the Short North sucker fish found in Klamath Lake. which, you know, if you actually saw somebody eat one of those, I'd be pretty impressed.
I was going to say, except for the fact they taste like dirt, so nobody's actually subsisting on those. We have to take a really quick break to ponder that. The fish that tastes like dirt is...
That nobody eats that we have to protect,
that lives in low water, that needs more water so we can turn off all the farming. Yeah. We're into that part of the program. So we hope you'll hang with us. It won't make any sense at the end, but you'll enjoy it. At least we'll have some good mocking. We'll be right back.
She thinks my tractor's sexy. It really turns her on. She's always staring at me while I'm chugging along. She likes the way it's pulling while we're tilling up her land. She's even kind of crazy about my farmer's tan. She's the only one who really understands what gets me. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
Well, I was born in a small town and I live in a small town.
And we're back. All right, Jim. So if they shut the water off there, up there, give us a bird's eye view. What does that translate into, and why should people care?
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Infrastructure okay. impacts from that have never been overcome. It shut down a bunch of businesses and around the project areas that depend upon those farmers for their livelihood. Many of the farm laborers that have been working there for, you know, a generation or two, some of them had to go away to find work so they could survive, and they never came back. So there's always a challenge in finding enough labor to operate a farm, you know, these days. It's a pretty big challenge. The impact to the economy was even greater than that. So in Siskiyou County, we have about the potential for up to $400 million in revenues from agricultural crops. And out of that $400 million, you know, $84 million are directly attributable to ground over in the Tule Lake arena, which is in the project, which is a pretty significant percentage of the total revenues for the whole county. Because the total revenues include cattle and timber, which are pretty diverse and spread out over most of the county. We have a great big county. So the impact to Siskiyou County was that those farmers did not have $84, $85 million in revenue. They had whatever handouts they could garner from emergency programs from the government. Unfortunately, when you give a handout to a grower, for example, which they did have some, they gave, you know, the dime. Willie Riggs at Oregon State University came up with a scenario that I'd like to kind of tell you about, if I did last time too. But a grower, you know, he sells his crop and he has like 10 dimes in his hand, for example, just for example. And he takes one of those dimes and he gives it to the tractor guy, and he takes a dime and gives it to the fertilizer guy, and he takes a dime and gives it to every one of the businesses that he supports. And then when he gets done, he has a dime in his hand, just everything went well and he had a profit. So when you get into a position where they can't farm because there's no water, you gotta have water to raise a crop, all he may get is that dime or a percentage of that dime from a handout to try to keep him alive to maybe survive and start growing the next year, if that happens. But that dime in his hand isn't spread out to anybody else in the community. None of the infrastructure gets that support when things go wrong. So in 2001, a farmer got a dime. None of the rest of them, the tractor guy didn't get any, none of the other infrastructure that there to support the farms and the community got anything out of that. And many of them have not recouped from that. So we've had four or five of those hammers in that area of Siskiyou County delivered to our infrastructure over the last, since 2001. There's been four or five water curtailments, water shutoffs, requirements for alternative water sources. They've restricted our ability to take what had been typically given to us out of the lakes for irrigation and made us pump water out of the ground. And now we have a potential for overdrafting water, groundwater.
Not to mention the cost of pumping is huge.
And the cost of pumping is horrible. And so, you know, costs have gone up and water availability has gone down. So we're looking at, 225,000 acres in round figures of project farm ground, because this happens in Oregon, in Siskiyou County and Modoc County, and not just in one county. So estimates are $557 million of agricultural revenue. There's about 4,500 jobs directly related to agriculture in the Klamath Basin, in the Klamath Project. And multipliers for every dollar generated in revenue is about another 91 cents for the community. So the Klamath Project is about a $1 billion project. And that's restricted big time when you don't have any water. So the employment multiplier, so every job that we have in agriculture, there's 0.6 of a job is created in the community. So 0.6, almost one. So you almost get another 4,500 jobs related to, agricultural production in Siskiyou County or in the Klamath Project. So every time you lose all that, you're looking at some major losses in the communities that we're operating in, not just in the infrastructure. So the infrastructure is a hamburger joint that feeds your people at lunchtime, the tire store that fixes your flats and sells you the tires, the guy that's the hardware store selling you all the nuts and bolts and everything else he's got, the irrigation guy that's selling his parts and pumps and fixing stuff for the irrigation systems. You know, the guy that's at the corner of a grocery store selling, dinner to you guys, restaurants that might survive in town, the guy fixing your car and your truck and stuff. None of those guys stay in business if there isn't a healthy economy there. And we lost a lot of them. And in a small community where there's low population levels and a hard way to make a living in the first place, you got to struggle to find a way to make a living in these small communities. It's pretty hard to recoup losses that have been generated from this fight that we are constantly in, trying to maintain access to water.
Yeah, and what happens is those folks can't make a living. The restaurant guy, the hardware guy, they move out of the area and they go where they can make a living, and so you get your water back the next year. That infrastructure's already collapsed.
Already flat. Yep. So we've lost a number of growers since 2001 directly attributed to these shutoffs. We've lost infrastructure in the arena of potato packing plants that could be associated with low prices, but it's without having a steady product to sell. Sometimes that has the impact of reducing contracts, because some of the products that we raise are based upon contracted crop production. So if you don't provide the agreed upon product, you lose your contract the next time around. So we've lost some of those things also. Little catch 22 that some of this people that are attacking the agricultural systems up in the Klamath Project area, as well as the water rights issues, are very well informed about. And currently this year, the gloves came off and everybody and their brothers is involved in a court suit against Klamath Project irrigators, you know, and that includes the tribe, all the tribes. We're talking about water downriver that's been reserved this year. No water was turned on when it was normally turned on in April because of a requirement to hold 50,000 acre feet in the lake for this flush flow. Well, the flush flow is supposed to wash out all these parasites to get into coho salmon and save them from, you know, from dying because of this parasite. There's very little evidence that that's successful, and there's some evidence that shows that it's not successful. And in fact, 1 year, 2 years ago or so, the flush flows that are required by a biological opinion were actually going to have happened during a major flood stage.
Yeah.
In the Klamath River.
Yeah, they were going to wash out the highway. It's like, yeah, no.
Yeah. So what are these people thinking? Sometimes I wonder. It's, if the flush flows worked that well, then that flood flow would probably have taken care of the problem, right?
You would think.
Why would they need to add more water to an already flood flow Klamath River? So a lot of controversy, questions and things. And if you look at it in a common sense way, and I'm prejudiced, I'm a member of the Tule Lake Irrigation District, as my family members, you know, there's definitely enough to go around. Contrary to what people say, contrary to what people think, it's just a conflict between powers and treaty rights, which are very powerful, powerful rights. And, you know, the intent of people trying to garner an agenda item such as the Everglades of the West being reestablished there, you know. So things that affect the county, every single one of those reductions in income affected the county tax revenues. Counties have a hard time making up for the mandated spending plans that the state gives them anyway. And put this on top of that, it gives them even less money to deal with the local requirements to support the government, which is, you know, the policeman that comes and helps you when you have a problem with a bad guy.
Yeah,
know,
police, fire, social services. When we we come back, Jim, give people some numbers on, you know, the dollar value of agriculture that gets lost in all of that. So what's going out of the food? You know, what's coming off the food production line that people won't see if they take all of that out. We're going to come right back with Jim Smith. He is the Ag Commissioner up in Siskiyou County, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
He's a cold beer drinker, a buck and deer hunter, the best friend a dog ever had. A post hole digger, a Mint's gold dipper, a John Deere cap sporting man. With a house on a hill and a pond in the field surrounded by a mess of cornrows. Makes a living from his labor, a credit to the maker. He's somebody everybody knows. Last of a dying breed who tend the fields and mend the fences. Heaven knows I hate to think that generation might be ending. But if he goes, he will go down in history. Last of the overall wearers, farmer tan terrors down at the VFW hall. No. Cape pan liquors, ripe tomato pickers, hay balers, loading trailers in the fall.
Nothing left for my kids in my life. Oh, I clung to that first cup of coffee, praying God, won't you show me what's real. Out in the distance, I saw through the window a man on a tractor with a dog in a field. Oh, the dog walked just like he was smiling. The man drove like the world was all right. The tractor hummed on like part of a song.
that you sing to your children at night. His work was laid out there before him. In rows of green, his whole life was revealed. Oh, what I wouldn't give if I could just live like a man on a tractor with a dog in a field.
So, all right. The man on the tractor with the dog in the field, we take those guys all off the ground. What are we losing just in that one area? Jim? Do we put Jim in the cone of silence?
What's that?
Oh, there you go. You were in the cone of silence there for just a second.
Oh. Are we back?
We are.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at this Facebook post that I thought was quite interesting.
You got lured in by Facebook.
Yeah.
We've been joking about it all afternoon.
I can buy my pair of dirty jeans for $400 from Nordstrom. I thought that was a pretty good offer.
Does it have rips in them? Because that's really the part I look for is the rips.
I don't think it has any rips. They're just dirty. They're dirty jeans.
Yeah, that's terrific. Go make sense of that. I see these ripped up dirty things, and I'm like, and I know you paid extra for that. Inexplicable. So if you took all these guys off the ground up there and they got their way, you know, they got their magical whatever they're doing up there that doesn't involve any agriculture, what have we taken out of the system? Give people an idea of just the volume that we're talking about.
$1 billion out of the Klamath Project would go away. About 9,000 jobs would go away. The value of the ground that was taxed at about $5,000 an acre to each of the county governments would be going away.
And that's approximately how many acres?
255,000 acres. With about an average value, current value of $5,000, which is a little bit shaky right now with all the threats to the water system. But the last sales that occurred in the basin were in the $5,000 range. And so, even without water, if they just turned the water off, an unreliable water supply would reduce the value of that ground considerable, you know, probably $1,000 an acre if it was dry land. It's a desert up there. You get about 13 inches of rain in a good year on average. And we would lose a lot of products. We have a multitude of different kind of crops that are raised up there. For example, they raise barley, wheat, oats, alfalfa for hay, grass, hay, cereal, grain, hay. We raise potatoes. A lot of them are contract potatoes that they raise for potato chips. So if you eat an In-N-Out burger, you're eating a Klamath Project potato because they supply all the potatoes for In-N-Out burger up in our country.
Well, good for them.
Well, yeah. They need to advertise that a little bit more.
I like In-N-Out Burger even more.
Stop their screaming. Yeah, they don't want to lose their...
Well, I should say French fries, not
French
potato
fries. Yeah.
French fries. Yeah,
well, but
sorry.
If you're British, it's chips. So, you know, we're good. We're covered. Our little friends across the pond.
I'm part English. I guess that passes.
There you go.
So other things we raise, strawberry nursery plants. So in the project, there's a number of strawberry nurseries. They also raise raspberries for roots and for canes, and they ship them all over the world. Dollar figures for some of the nursery crops in the basin are enormous. In fact, if you eat a strawberry in California or Oregon, or not necessarily all Oregon, they still have some canning strawberry types up there. But most likely, the strawberries you eat have been raised on a plant that came from McDowell or Butte Valley or Tule Lake or Klamath County. Most of them in the project area. So, yeah. And we raise dehydrator onions, mint for like peppermint oil. We raise horseradish. The West Coast capital of the horseradish production area is in Tule Lake, actually. We have microgreen lettuce, and we raise carrots and carrot seed. So we have a pretty wide range of diverse crops, nothing like what you find down south, of course, but for a cold climate with 110 or 120 on a good year, day growing season, that's not too shabby. considering that they also took 60 days of our growing season away from us at the beginning of the year, the crops actually look pretty good over there so far. What they will do this year based upon yield and quality is kind of up in the air still because it's short season. I'm just hoping they're going to meet the minimum requirements for grade so they get big enough and they can be sold. We're still wondering if that's going to happen also.
Yeah, because if they don't make grade, everything just gets plowed under, doesn't it?
Now they may find an alternative method to use them. So they sell them for pennies on the dollar to maybe a guy that has a bunch of cows to feed. But it's definitely a big loss, so it would be a bad deal.
Yeah.
So some of these things cost a lot of money to raise. I wanted to address that. People, you know, you look at farms and you probably don't realize that it takes a lot of capital to do farming. So let's take a potato, for example. You know, they're paying $5,000 or $6,000 an acre to raise a potato. And if they get $6 or $7 per sack on a good yield, they might break even. So they need to have a little bit more money than that to make money. And oftentimes they cost the profit percentage is pretty dadgum low. So I may go a couple years without even making any money, and then the one year that they're going to make money, the tribe has a suit against them and the water gets turned off. So it puts them into a very big disadvantage economically, unfairly in some cases, you know, on this, how do you go to your bank and borrow money for a business that doesn't have the reliable, you know, inputs that you need to complete the deal.
Well, that's something that I don't think a lot of people understand is these farmers go to a bank every year and borrow money to put that crop in the ground, and that money gets repaid after the crop comes off, and you have a bad year and that crop doesn't pay the loan, you're going to have a hard time going back to that bank the next year when you still haven't repaid the year before. It's
very difficult.
Very difficult.
And it's especially ironic if the cause of that isn't Mother Nature, which farmers deal with every single year, or some unforeseen circumstance that is also dealt with a lot of times. But it happens to be a lawsuit that, you know, curtails and needed input without notice, such as the 2001 water cutoff that was like came out of nowhere. Government shut off the water and everybody in the whole country was left holding a bag. Real fair deal.
Well, and then, you know, a lot of times you have people who don't really deal with farming at all. That's a small percentage of our population. So a lot of people are decidedly unfamiliar with where their food originates. And you look at the other things that happen around farming. And we talked about that a bit last week with the leased lands around, all the, you know, the wetland they have up there, and they've got, you know, that's a part of the Pacific Flyway. So you've got all these birds that are counting on, you know, stopping there during their travels, and you mess up that whole thing too. I mean, there are a lot of integrated pieces to this whole thing. It isn't, I don't know, somehow people have this weird, mistaken notion that, you know, farmers are just sitting around getting wealthy.
Yeah, they just got a bag full of money. They don't understand that that tractor he's got out there turning the soil, he borrowed money and has a loan against it, and that's got to be repaid.
Well,
and
like we have,
if it goes back to the tractor guy, then the tractor guy loses money. And
but see, I think people forget too, like they look at, you know, we have farmers that are elected officials, so they look at their net worth and they're like, oh, that guy's a millionaire. Well, he has farmland. But that doesn't mean you can take it and buy fries from In-N-Out with it. You know, it's ground.
That's right.
It has value, but that's not liquid value. It's sitting there.
It can be, you know, definitely attacked by having situations like we've had where the water got turned off some of that. Or the threat of that affects that value also. So
what was going on, you know, up there, Jim? We have like an hour. Oh, we have an hour. We have a minute before our next break. I guess my hours and minutes just rolled together. and we can carry it over into the next segment, but, you know, I'm always channeling, you know, some environmentalist hater in the back of my head that's going, well, you know, if all those farmers weren't there, we'd have this beautiful natural landscape, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's high desert up there. It's pretty darn dry. If these guys weren't putting water on the ground, I mean, this place turns into the high desert again.
Yeah. Tourist attraction.
Absolutely would. You know, there's a certain amount of groundwater, but it takes ages to get down and recharge. The other thing that you might keep in mind is that the project developed a bypass from Lost River to run into the Klamath River to provide more flow and to reduce the need to pump water close through the Sheepy Peak area into lower Klamath Lake area. And so it wouldn't flood everything. If they tried to change that right now, I believe the Endangered Species Act with the coho being involved would probably have something about along the lines of, well, you can't change the Klamath River's flow by re-diverting Lost River back into Tule Lake. I think there would be some repercussions. Plus, you know, the land is in a 13 inches per year at best average rainfall area. So, you know, if they ever thought they had enough water to fill it all back up without waiting for hundreds of years,
that's good luck with that. Well, that's why before the Klamath dams, it all went dry in the summer. A really quick break, and then we're going to come back with our guest, Jim Smith. He's the Ag Commissioner up there in Siskiyou County. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Still you wonder who's cheating who, and who's being true, who don't even care anymore. It makes you wonder who's doing right for someone tonight, whose car's parked next door. Mississippi, she's calling my name. Catfish are jumping, that paddle wheel bumping. Black water keep rolling on fast just the same.
Oh, black water keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, black water keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, black water.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
We couldn't talk about all this water without playing that one. That was a must. All right, so Jim, we've got approximately 10 minutes left. Of course, we have burned through two more hours, and we didn't talk about predation, but we don't really have time. So what else do people need to know about the Klamath Project? I guess to be informed as they're reading all this, because really most of the stuff you read about that whole situation up there is propaganda.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The things that people should be aware of is that water rights have been adjudicated, currently adjudicated, and that included a biological opinion for water flows. Lake levels were established to protect the sucker fish. There is research going on right now that's long-term and very expensive on the sucker fish themselves by the USGS biological research team. They've been there for about 10 years now, and they still don't have a good handle on why sucker fish have issues.
Oh, what a great taxpayer expense.
Jeez.
Terrific.
Yeah, so, you know, the juvenile retention thing is a pretty deal. You might keep in mind also that farmers have always advocated previously if we needed more suckerfish in the lake, we should raise them and turn them out when they're likely to survive if we can. And I'd like the people to know that, we have an old lake. It's in its last stages of life. It's highly, you know, full of sediment, and it grows a lot of algae in it because it's warm water and it's shallow. And some of those things contribute to poor water quality downstream, but there's also some things that occur naturally up above Klamath Lake and some of the tributaries, soil provides a lot of nutrients that, you know, promote the growth of this algae in the lake and has an effect on water quality, which everybody's concerned about, having high amounts of phosphorus and some other things naturally occurring. And oftentimes when the water is used for irrigation, the tailwater that runs back into the Klamath River, which is the water that we don't use, is clean. It doesn't have that phosphorus level in it because it's been taken out and attached to soil particles. So there's some benefits to some of the water coming back out of that. The amount of water that usually goes into, you know, the TID arena is probably something less than what Lost River would have put back into the lake if that whole flow was diverted over there. So what we have is an interdependent group of dams and waterways that were designed to deliver water to farms and ranches at an 80% efficiency rating, which is a very, very, very high standard for irrigation systems, and to deliver the tailwater back into the Klamath River, which is cleaner than when it came out of the Klamath Lake. Those are all positive things that happen along with the $1 billion in revenue that is generated by that small area in the Oregon and California border.
And this could all be happening at the same. This could all be happening in concert, right? This really isn't an either or system because the conflict is really manufactured.
The conflict
makes it so annoying.
The conflict, unfortunately, is polarized to gain power and influence, no matter what the statements are, by the competing interests. You know, I have interest in agriculture, and I pretty much support that. But I think most people realize that there is enough to go around. It becomes an issue when Klamath Lake waters are brought into question for downstream flows. Klamath Lake waters are hot, full of algae and material, and aren't really suitable habitat for anything in the Klamath River running downstream without the tributaries that contribute to it unfettered right now. So, you know, you run into another issue, which is the family farmers are generations old up there, and they're family farmers. They're not corporate farmers. They'll all go away without water. They won't have any way to make a living. If you want to see that happen and support those environmental groups that claim that we're causing harm to the environment, you know, we also have the dam removal project that seems to be ongoing. And, you know, you take the dams out of the Klamath River currently, there's all kinds of claims. They've made budgets for that, but they're pretty unrealistic from what I've read. There's a lot of conflicts in how much it's going to cost and how much sediment's actually going to get washed down the river and how many years it's going to take to wash into the ocean. And that very sediment is what they're claiming hampers the spawning and success of, you know, the salmon.
Sure, but throwing 20 million cubic yards of sediment into the river and expecting it to wash down 190 miles. I mean, I don't think people realize sometimes how far that is. It's 190 miles of river.
And it's often not, you know, we don't often have flood stage waters to help either. The other thing is, okay, the dams come out, the natural flows are reinstituted, and Klamath Lake's dries up. There won't be any water coming out of Klamath Lake. And there won't be any water running into the Klamath River from there.
Yeah, Klamath River goes dry, right?
Historically, that nobody wants to admit that for some reason.
Yeah, so you got that to look at.
It's mystery
history. You also have the fact that during floods, you know, those towns and houses and stuff downriver are going to be in harm's way sometimes, you know, which they are not right now. Although none of the dams were built for flood control, I have to agree with that. That was the purpose, was to generate electricity. Little tidbit, too, I'd like to throw out there. My grandfather was a World War I veteran. He joined when he was 16, and he went to France and fought there. And in his telling of the story of the project development, the project had all the water rights. The growers had all the water rights. They were given to each individual homesteader veteran homesteader by the President of the United States himself. They willingly gave up some of their water rights to promote the development of those dams to generate electricity to support the project. In return, they got a guarantee of power, and they agreed to provide power for 50 years to the project irrigators at a retail value when they signed the agreement. So in the beginning, these were put into place to support the project to start with. And I just think my grandfather would be having a heart attack right now if he saw all the claims and all the changes that have occurred in the operation of that project. It's unfortunate. That's typical, I guess, when you start considering how things evolve over time and conflicting interests come to bear.
Oh, yeah, conflicting interests, and people forget what the original purpose was.
But you have, in this, I think the most frustrating part of this whole thing is the big conflicts are really created with revisionist history and magical science. I mean, this isn't actual science is creating a conflict. This is fiction that's creating conflict. You know, the idea that because the dam removal people will constantly tell you that by taking out the dams, they're going to have more water and more fish.
Right.
Okay. Well, you're going to take out a hatchery. Oh, they think they're going to keep the hatchery. There won't be any water to run the hatchery, but they're going to keep the hatchery. So those 6 million fish, boom, they're gone. But they're going to have more fish by taking out the 6 million that they're putting in the system.
But the river's going to go dry if there's no dams.
Right. But then you got to go to the other magical pieces of history because, you know, the coho salmon are endangered, but I can buy them at Costco. But they're different somehow, and nobody seems to be able to give me an adequate explanation to that, mostly because I refuse to hear it. I'm brutal that way. But, you know, all of this is just, and I'm going to say self-inflicted, but it's obviously not the farmers doing it. This is government and special interests that have just gone berserk. And for some reason, they're laser focused on this one place.
Can't argue with that. Definitely agree with that.
It's nuts. And so when people, you know, when you start telling people about this, they go, well, I don't get it. You're like, well, don't get all worked up. It's going to get, you know,
it's going to get crazier.
It makes less sense. The farther you dig into it, the nuttier it becomes. We're going to have to do tons more shows, obviously, on the Klamath to keep people up to speed. But I really do hope people that aren't haven't already signed up with a team on one side or the other, I really hope you'll do some homework and look at actual facts. And if it makes no sense, it might actually be fiction. So anyway, thanks a million, Jim. And we again burned through 2 more hours. Did you think it would go this fast?
No, absolutely not.
I know. It's lots of fun for everyone.
Thank you very much, Jim, for coming on.
Thanks a million. So Jim Smith is the Ag Commissioner up in Siskiyou County. It's a place with lots of issues and problems that we talk about a lot because it's coming for you someplace else. So tune in next week, WeThePeopleRadio.us.